Welcome to Talk with the Texan, Money and Life with Troy Eckert. This program is thought-provoking, informative, entertaining, and down to business. We face facts and ideas about how to make, protect, and build your net worth. You'll get over three decades of frontline experiences and real-life examples of what to do and the pitfalls to avoid. Now, here's Troy Eckert.
Hey, everyone. I hope everybody's having a great day today, and thank you so much for joining me. I'm the host, Troy Eckert. This is Talk with a Texan, Money and Life. Don't forget, at any time, you can always contact us at 866-472-5790. Well, today is kind of an interesting day for me because I'm going to get to talk about the thing that I enjoy the most, which is the U.S. oil and gas industry. Now, believe it or not, the oil and gas industry is an investment sector. It is an industrial sector that the majority, I'm talking 95% of the investment community in the United States knows very little about, if anything. Now, that is absolutely shocking to me, but I'm going to say that that's probably the way I feel. Now, why do I get to say that? Well, starting in 1985, seems like, you know, centuries ago, I started my career as an investment broker working in a small investment firm representing high net worth investors who wanted to directly own interest in oil and gas wells. I've now been fortunate to have a career that spans over three decades, going on 37 years, specifically in the U.S. oil and gas industry. Now, why is today's subject so relevant in today's market? And of course, to you, my listeners, why is it so important? Well, let me tell you, I like to think of things in a macro view. I like to step back and take a look at the macro. I do this all the time. I have people come to me on business ideas. They come to me with, you know, how can we put money together, about making investments, buying real estate, startups. And I always listen to what they say. And then I start with the simple premise. And I say this all the time, and it kind of takes them aback. And I say, look, explain to me your idea. Tell me what you're looking for. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Now, let's clear the table and start with the premise. If money were not an object, if you had access to all the money you needed, what would you really do? Now, the reason I say that is that everything evolves around capital. You can't put a dam in, a highway in, a bridge in. You can't send spacecraft out to space. You can't build warships. You can't run a business, mow the grass, or put food on the table if it is not about capital or rotation of something to do with some kind of monetary exchange. I don't care if you trade two goats for a cow. I don't care what you do. There is a monetary or valuation exchange taking place. Well, the oil and gas sector really is one of the strongest, if not the most important component to the U.S. economy. And what we've been experiencing the last few months, and what we've been experiencing really for the last decade, is that U.S. oil and gas has played a dominant role in the success and failure of the U.S. economy. Now, it's not the cause or the effect in many cases, meaning that the price of oil going up, gasoline at the pump, it's generally not the cause of an economic downturn or a boom in the economy. It usually is one of the elements within the economy that causes things to either go higher or lower, or it can put economic stress depending on the, the margins by which oil and gas moves. In other words, if it's really high, it's going to cause higher utility bills, higher fuel costs. If it goes low, well, it's going to create less consumption of those free cash flowing dollars and allow companies to use those to expand their business, hire more employees, and grow their business. So I chose today to talk about the U.S. oil and gas industry because, one, it's a political hot topic. I'll tell everybody where I stand right now, and that is I'm in the oil and gas business, and I believe the oil and gas business is here for the foreseeable future. I'm not talking 5, 10, 20 years, unless there's some kind of miracle found that goes way beyond the fuel in your car or the electricity in your home. We will not see the end of oil and gas exploration or production globally for the next 100 years or more. Not going to happen. Now, there'll be some changes in demand, there'll be changes in consumption, there'll be changes in supply, but you're going to still see petroleum and fossil fuel products constantly being consumed across the globe, no matter what anybody wants to think. I don't care what they promote, what kind of sales pitch they're giving you, the Green Deal, it's just not going to happen. So today I'm going to talk about the industry. I'm going to talk about how instrumentally important it is to the U.S. economy. And then I'm going to tell you what investors should be thinking about and how investors can use the sector of U.S. oil and gas or the petroleum industry to look at balancing their investment portfolios, or at least factoring how it's going to affect things like inflation and affect things like their utility bills, labor costs, and virtually every kind of cost coming from any type of supply, both in services and in goods. So let's just start breaking it down real quick. Okay, so first off, just to remind you, this is Troy Eckert, Talk with the Texan, Money and Life. Now, again, I always try to tie money back to your life. And the truth of the matter is that as the price of oil and gas continues to go up, it is affecting and will continue to affect and more deeply affect in a negative way every American in this country as a result of rising energy prices. Now, I don't care whether you're a single mom trying to raise two kids and you're looking at your electric bill, you're looking at your cost of fuel in your car, you're looking at the cost of buying goods in the store that are made from petroleum product. The fact of the matter is it's going to eat into the income that single mother's making, giving her less discretionary dollars to go to the movie, to buy things for the kids and clothes and shoes. And there is going to be a negative resulting factor with rising energy prices on how that individual lives their life. Let's go to the bigger companies. Do you think for a second Amazon is going to keep dropping those beautiful little cardboard boxes at your front gate for free when the price of oil is at $100 to $150 a barrel? The answer is no. The answer is they are going to have to push that price back to the vendors and the suppliers and the goods they deliver, or they're going to have to start charging a surcharge because one of two things is going to happen. We're going to stop ordering those little fancy items and all those little toothbrushes and chairs and furniture coming to our house. If we have to pay a surcharge or the cost of those goods continues to go up, we'll order less and less, which means what? Amazon's going to go down in revenue and go down in stock price. Or somehow along that supply chain, somebody's going to have to absorb the underlying rise in energy costs. Somebody's going to have to eat it. Is it the consumer? Is it the transportation company? Is it the manufacturer? Is it the raw material provider? Is it the labor force? Where is it going to come from? Now, I always think about this because it's like a setting up a set of dominoes. I used to do this as a kid. I loved it. You set up dominoes. You try to figure out all these wild configurations and spirals and curves and going off of books and staircases and figure out how can I make the most long, contiguous, kind of instrumentally different type of configuration with the dominoes and see if I can knock them over and if one hits the other and how far that chain will go. Well, that's really what's going to happen in this economy is we're going to have a chain reaction. The chain reaction is going to be based on what does happen with rising inflation and how that rising inflation starts to affect us as a result of now oil and gas, the petroleum sector is now caught up in that inflation. And in fact, where oil and gas really was a drag along victim of inflation, it now is going to probably lead the way in underlying inflation as oil and gas prices continue to rise every single week. So here we are. We're a country that's vibrant. We're growing. The U.S. dollar is up. It's on a tear. I'm going to have to eat some humility here because I said a year and a half ago the dollar was definitely in a position to drop back down to 2008 levels down in the 70s. And what I'm now seeing in all the charts and data and information tells me that the dollar is probably poised to follow inflation, and we could see the dollar back up in the $110 to $120 range, and then it's going to fall off a cliff like Mount Everest. Because why? We're the safest currency in the world. Well, dollars, crude oil is traded in U.S. dollars. So you can look at the U.S. dollar, historically what it did in the 1980s, and the U.S. dollar what it did in 2008. And what you see is that when the dollar moves much higher, it almost goes in unison ahead of the price of crude oil. And that tells me that if today we're looking at how the U.S. economy is going to be affected by inflation, which is now being pushed and driven, and oil and energy and gas prices are actually becoming one of the stronger components of driving inflation up, we know that we're going to see a continuation in the rise of the dollar. So I can tell you, I was wrong last year. I did not really understand we were going to put $5 to $10 trillion into the U.S. market, and the rest of the globe was going to consider the U.S. dollar the strongest of the weakest currency. So by all accounts, the U.S. dollar should be 20 basis points lower. It should be down in the low 80s or 70s. But because of the stimulation, the adding of $5 plus trillion, and the entire world's confidence that we will never default, and the whole world's confidence this is the safest currency out there, the dollar continues to rise. It defies logic, but it falls in line with historical patterns. Now, when you look at crude oil, which trades in the U.S. dollar, we start to say, well, wait a minute. What was going first? Was the dollar going up, then crude oil, or crude oil going up, pushing the dollar? Well, we kind of look at this last, August of 2020, right after the lockdown and COVID shut in, and we see the dollar dropped to about 89, didn't quite get to 88, I don't believe, but as it dropped, so was the price of oil down. And then as oil prices recovered, here comes the dollar, and now they're kind of overpassing one another. It looks to me like we have a continuation of the dollar is now trailing. I mean, the crude oil price is trailing the dollar. Now, all of this is going to be summarized in today's podcast, because what I want to do is tell you what we're going to do about it, how we can take advantage of it, and how that might be an opportunity for you as investors to consider what that's going to do to your overall portfolio and how you can best understand it. So let's just break this down. There's three sectors in the oil and gas industry. In the U.S. oil and gas petroleum industry, the industry is broken down into three sectors. There's what they call the upstream sector, and that is what I refer to as the headwaters. It is the seismic shoots. It's the seismic acquisition. It's the leasing. It's the mineral rights. It's the exploration. It's the production. It's everything it takes to get the raw material extracted from out of the ground and collected at a wellhead into a localized tank, or at least from the production being extracted from a well that's been drilled. So it's the upstream, okay? And that upstream means, like a Mississippi River, it's the point of origin, it's the commencement, it's the beginning of the stream by which everything starts. All right. We then look at what we call the midstream. And the midstream is the second sector in the oil and gas industry. And that particular sector is made up of everything that has to do with gathering and transportation. It has to do with processing. It has to do with putting gathering lines in from wellheads, taking it to a collection point. It's the pipelines that take those gathering lines and put them into a larger transportation system. We go from 6-inch pipelines to maybe a 12 or 16 or 24-inch transportation line carrying multiple customers, crude oil, both intra and interstate. So the midstream component or sector within the oil and gas industry is all about transportation, processing, and refining. And the downstream, which is the very end, kind of like as the Mississippi dumps downstream into the Gulf of Mexico, that is the part where it goes to the consumer. It's the end user. It's the consumption part. Whether it's in plastics or butanes or propanes or gasoline or diesel or the things that make up all the synthetics based off of fossil fuels, that is the downstream market that says this is the final disbursement of that raw material as it goes through the food chain, upstream, midstream to downstream. And that's what 99.9% of most Americans understand to be the stuff that's made out of oil and gas that we use. So those three sectors all unto themselves are very specific, very unique. They really do have massively difference in both economics, risk, reward, the ability to invest and participate. They're all different. And so that's kind of interesting that you can have an entire sector that really is based on fossil fuels, the evil fossil fuel producers of the world. But as you move through the midstream and the downstream, you now have consumers who may really think they hate fossil fuels, but every single day, every single American 100% uses, consumes, transported by, delivered by, utilization from a barrel of crude oil or MCF of natural gas. So I think the key is that what do we do as my listeners, what do we do today to understand how oil and gas is going to affect the economy as we continue to see prices rise? So let's go back to something that some of you may or may not have heard about. A long time ago, and I believe his name was Yergin, Y-E-R-G-I-N, had talked about something called peak oil. And peak oil was always the assumption that at some point in time, due to the price of crude oil and the inability of technology and the inability of exploration companies to successfully find, locate, and extract enough oil and gas to feed ongoing demand. At some point, we were going to peak as an industry with the ability of finding enough or more oil and gas to satisfy continual demand increases. There was going to be a peak, and then we were going to be in a decline. And that little finish line has been moving every single time. Every time I've seen the report since the 1980s is we're going to run out of oil by the 1990s. We're going to run out of oil and gas by the 2000s. We're going to run out of oil and gas by 2020. And now we're not even seeing peak oil as being, that I can tell, anywhere on the chart. Now, why is that? Why is it that back in the 1980s, we could look at the oil and gas industry and say, we think somewhere in the distant future, we're going to run out of fossil fuels to supply the necessary consumption and demand? Well, things happen. And the way things happen is just like in most sectors, is that there is a lot of ingenuity and a lot of intelligent people out there, engineers, all types of specialists who can utilize intellectual assets, their brains, to solve problems. And the solving of problems results in solutions. And sometimes those solutions are completely contrarian or out of the box to based on the premise of what's been normal. So if you've been doing something one way for all the last 40 or 50 years and somebody scratches their head and says, wait a minute, we've always taken the hangers and put it from the left to the right side, but all the clothes come in on the left side. Why do we do that? Well, I don't know. The guy had one arm missing, so he kept grabbing over the top and putting them on the right side because he could put the clothes on with his right hand. That's how it got started. Well, why do we figure out a whole nother pattern? In fact, why are we even using the hangers? In fact, why are we even having the clothes come down the assembly line like it looks? In other words, I'm giving you a little bit of drama, but I'm saying this is how things are reconfigured and how things are solved. In the oil and gas space, we had one major problem. We could not successfully find enough oil and gas reserves in the United States to even come close to meeting the demand that we had. We had a problem at the very headwaters of the fossil fuel industry. We did not have the technology to locate oil and gas geological reserves in this country to even sustain ourselves, much less keep up with growing demand. Now, the interesting thing is that when you have the majority of the population, let's call it 95% of the American population, does not have a clue how oil and gas works. What they know is they come to expect it. They expect to go up to a gas station and there'll be processed gasoline available in that gas station to fill up their car. They have a bad tire. They expect to pull up to a discount tire, walk in, get an assessment, get a value, and a brand new tire stuck on their car in 30 minutes to an hour. They want to pick up the phone, which is all made from oil and gas, either the mining of the raw material, the transportation, the configuration, the plastic case, the glass. You look at every virtual component on that cell phone they're using. It came from, derived, transported, manufactured by, mined by oil and gas. So all of a sudden, you start looking around and asking yourself, well, if everything's made from oil and gas, and everything we stand on, the carpet, the clothes I wear, the glasses I have on my face, the microphone I'm speaking in right now, the question becomes, how in the world do we plan on substituting that or eliminating it? I don't know. There's a great old movie that Mel Gibson played in called Mad Max. And I like that movie. I mean, look back on it now. It's very, very rustic, hardcore movie because it's not a lot of great acting in it. But the truth of the matter is always about fuel. Who had the fuel? And that's really what you're talking about. Without the fuel, Rommel saw that in the desert, that when you run out of fuel, you run out of any way to defend yourself, and you run out of any way to advance your troops. If you run out of oil and gas and you don't have petroleum, America would never be the same as it is today. In fact, we would regress in almost every area of our lives without oil and gas. So this is not a sales pitch. This is not a commercial oil and gas. This is going through the reality of where we're at in the petroleum industry in this country. And it's going to talk to you a little bit about the realities of where we're at. So peak oil was this big, big acronym used all the time, peak oil, peak oil, peak oil. And I kept looking at it going, I don't see peak oil, I see economics. You talk about peak oil, I'm talking about pay me more and I'll find more. I mean, I think they could solve cancer tomorrow if there was more money in solving cancer than there was in oncology. I'm no questions asked. I think most problems in this country or across the globe could be solved if there was enough financial incentive to give the smartest people on this planet the incentive to go solve that problem. They would do it. So when we talk about peak oil, we're talking about somebody who came up with an idea using what data they had to predetermine the length of the industry, the extent of the industry. And that really has been kind of an underlying basis for why these alternative energies came about. I think the alternative energies were more about necessity than they were about the environment. The environment is become, to me, a hijacked subject. I don't believe it. I believe the world doesn't spin on a perfect sphere. I believe at the end of the day, where there used to be water in Carlsbad Cavern in New Mexico is now dry at the bottom. That has nothing to do with the environment. It has to do with this little planet Earth doesn't spin on the same sphere, same point every day, ever, and everything changes. And the nomads used to pick up and move. as the weather changed, the water changed, and the buffalo moved, and it became more or less a more favorable location by picking up and moving. We don't do that anymore. We go put our stake in the ground in Las Vegas, Nevada. We say we're nowhere in the middle of the desert, and we're going to build a city that's got 3 or 4 million people, and we're expecting it to have water. From where? It's a desert. So it amazes me how we as a culture have looked at the oil and gas industry and said, we've taken it for granted. We expect cheap fuel. We get upset when gasoline prices go from $1.69 a gallon to $4 a gallon. The truth of the matter is, it ought to be $8 or $10 a gallon. Why is that? Well, if something costs a lot more money and it starts to eat into your discretionary capital, meaning I could either fill my car up for $100 or I can go to the movies and have some popcorn and enjoy my kids. Well, I'm not going to take that long trip with my car because I don't want to spend the money in that car. I'd rather stay local, eat a local restaurant, go to a local movie and use my money that way. When fuel and the cost of energy begins to change your life, you're going to make a very fundamental choice. Do you change your life or do you change the underlying elements of how you live your life? So when we think about oil and gas, one, we take it for granted. Two, nobody understands it. And three, it is diminishing. It's one of the only natural resources on the planet that every day we burn a barrel of oil, it's never going to be on this planet Earth again. I can go mine for gold and I can take and melt it and chop it up and split it and put in rings and necklaces and teeth and everything else. It's still here. It's still present on planet Earth. But when we burn that barrel of oil or we burn up that natural gas, it goes into the atmosphere. It's gone. So we do have a diminishing resource in fossil fuels. Same thing with coal. So I look at it from my standpoint and I say, all right, you've been in this industry for 36 years. You now have this huge false premise called green energy, which is a joke and a half. AOC couldn't tell you which way a drill bit turns, which way to turn on a light on her wall switch, right? That's my opinion. But the fact of the matter is that they've created enough of a political game and football with it. They've convinced everybody, including board members of Exxon, who are now board members who don't even like oil and gas, to change their ways and become carbon neutral. What does carbon neutral mean? Does it mean I'm an alcoholic but only drink whiskey? Does it mean I'm an alcoholic but only drink on days ending in Y? Or does it mean you're an oil and gas company? That's what you do for a living. Unless you plan on getting out of the oil and gas industry, the reality of it is the only way you can become carbon neutral is to go satisfy the definition of carbon neutral and try to figure out how to have enough assets that supposedly offset what you generate in oil and gas to be neutral, which is what they're pushing. Now, I'm not going to get in a political soapbox, but I'm telling you, there's a reason for this. At the end of the day, this economy, the U.S. economy, the global economy, is going to be driven by energy prices. All right? Those that are producing the most oil, Saudi Arabia, OPEC, and Russia, are loving what they're seeing. They love the fact that the Green Deal is being pushed. Because the only way alternative energy resources are economically viable or even competitive to oil and gas must be a lot higher. So those who are pushing this green agenda, those who want to see alternative energy sources used to cripple or to restrict the oil and gas sector, they must do everything they can, both in political gyrations, both in poor media lies, and more importantly, through regulation, make the cost of fossil fuel so high that consumers will gladly switch from maybe a combustion engine to electric vehicle or to some other means of transportation, not completely relying upon petroleum or fossil fuels, but much lesser degree. So I believe what we're seeing right now is a result of a false market. It is a market driven by things such as the Green Deal and tree hugging and all this kind of save the planet nonsense. And the truth of the matter is, it is going to make the very, very element of the economy in the United States that much more unstable, more expensive, and it will affect every single consumer in this country as a result that we all use fossil fuels and oil and gas every single day. Now, when I come on the back half of the show, what I want to do is go into a little more details about how you can invest in or consider looking at. I'm not selling you investments. You do what you want. I'm saying, if you decide you like the fossil fuel market and you follow my thinking, which is it's a bunch of nonsense, I'm kind of enjoying the overregulation and the beating down and the negative press because it sends away competitors. It makes all these large capital providers run to something like alternative energy and all these crazy green deals and this carbon neutral investing. It's going to have their money go elsewhere which in turn deprives the oil and gas industry the much needed capital, which in turn does exactly the opposite of what the consumers need. It drives oil and gas and consumer utilities and gasoline and products and supplies. It drives it through the roof, which in turn slows down their consumption. But it also means it's got to keep oil and gas at such a high price. It makes things like wind and solar and other alternative energies look competitive, which means at the end of the day, it is going to be disastrous for the economy as a result of really, really high sustainable prices. Hey, listen, this is Troy Eckert. This is Talk with the Texan, Money and Life. I'll see you on the back half of the hour.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
America is heading over a fiscal cliff. Home prices are still receding and unemployment growing.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
This is Talk with a Texan, Money and Life. To reach Troy Eckert or his guest on the live program, we invite you to call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to Troy at talkwiththetexan.com. Now back to the show.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for coming to the back half of the show. I look forward to continuing our conversation. Today's show is all about the U.S. oil and gas industry, where we're at, and how it will affect and is affecting every day the U.S. economy. I know that many of you are probably just not even thinking about how oil and gas and gasoline and utilities are going to affect things like your investments, such as your apartment complexes, your self-storage, your investments in residential property, your transportation for your business. Most of this is really not in your face yet or looking at your bottom line yet as to how this rising price oil and gas is going to dramatically affect the next 24 to 36 months. So I was talking the first half of the show about something called peak oil, which is the estimate or the guesstimate of when we thought, or the actual author of the peak oil theory, when oil and gas would reach such a point of output that it was not going to be able to sustain it. We'd get to a certain plateau, boom, can't produce any more than our maximum number. Now we're on a decline. Well, that is something that has constantly been moved, as I said in the first half of the hour, where that date of the expected peak oil just keeps moving. And to me, it's kind of like climbing Mount Everest. You know, you got stage 1 through 20 or whatever stages are on Mount Everest. And you go, well, it's only one more stage, only two more stages. That's only six more stages. And you're like, where is the top of this mountain that we're supposed to fall off of? Well, that peak oil theory is continually having a date and an expectation move down the road because the oil and gas industry has decided that because the price of oil and the price of natural gas are relatively high enough that the risk the oil and gas industry needed to take and they have taken in order to find and explore for oil and gas in places they've never produced it from before, both from formations and geographical locations, the financial rewards offset the risk. And as a result, the oil and gas industry, specifically in the United States, took off and made historical, successful rejuvenation of the oil and gas industry here in this country as a result of the fact oil and gas prices were high enough to reward those companies for taking the risk. So peak oil is something that I believe has been pushed way down the road long, long after I'm dead and gone. But the fact of the matter is it will happen one day. One day we'll reach a point where finding enough oil and gas economically, successfully, consistently, and reliably may not happen because there's only a finite amount here on the planet Earth, because it is organic material buried in the ground based on millions of years of processing and creation. Okay. So one of the things I want to do is talk to you about how you as investors might be looking at, or listeners, investors might be looking at ways to participate in oil and gas. Well, let's start with the easy one. The easy one is you can go to the stock market and find oil and gas specific companies that either supply material, products, they supply services, they supply all types of along the supply chain parts of the oil and gas sector. So it could be mineral companies, it could be exploration companies, production companies. You've got the Halliburtons of the world, the Schlumbergers of the world. You have companies that are in the pipeline business, Kinder Morgans, the midstream sectors. You have refining businesses. You have some that are in both refining and production, like ExxonMobil. So you could just look at public stocks. You could just say, hey, you know what? I want to play the oil and gas sector. I want to see how the oil and gas sector responds based on just looking at adding some energy or oil and gas fossil fuel stocks to my portfolio. I'm sure I'll be able to see some uplift from investing in those particular public stocks if the oil and gas industry and commodity prices indicate there's going to be an uptick. Because let's face it, the oil and gas industry is all about two things: cash flow and reserves. If we have cash flow, we grow, we expand, we drill, we buy, we lease, we apply new equipment, we use new technology. If the price of oil and gas is down, our cash flow is down, we hunker down, we don't spend money, we get on a budget, we just wait it out until finally we get paid enough for money for the oil and gas we produce to allow us to go back to growing. And then the reserves in the ground are reserves that have been found through exploration. And of course, the technology and the intellectual assets, the engineers and production staff and the companies that have all those different people and skill sets to pull the oil and gas out of the ground, those reserves are worth some value at some price, and they're worth a whole lot more value at a much higher price. So those reserves, as far as economically viable, they change all the time based on the price of commodities. Now, when I think about it, if I don't want to be strictly in trying to pick which stock to buy, maybe I don't know enough about each company, I do want to point out something: that oil and gas stocks do not follow oil and gas prices. You take a look at ExxonMobil. I've owned Exxon since the 1990s. And the fact is, I've always said, at least for the last 2 years, ExxonMobil, XOM, follows West Texas Intermediate pricing by about $7 to $10. Right now, it's running about $15 behind. I think today it's trading at $64 a share. And the reason I believe that that little trend, that little ticker of being within $5 to $7 of West Texas Intermediate pricing for crude oil for Exxon, their stock, is that they have a lot involved in the refining and processing. So on one side, their exploration division is making a lot more money because the price of oil and gas is higher. On the flip side, the other part of their company and the refining and processing and all those petrochemicals, Mark, that they're getting less margins because the price of oil means they're getting squeezed. The consumers have not quite been able to be pushed up to the level of buying those processed products using refined oil and gas to justify. They can't pay more yet. They haven't been charged more yet. So Exxon is not the benefactor of those petrochemicals and all those downstream products as a result of rising crude oil price. So their margins have been squeezed. Exxon's sitting about $15 behind West Texas Intermediate. From a guy who's been trailing it for 30 years, I can tell you, give it about 6 or 12 months, the consumers will start to pay the market price for those downstream services. You'll see Exxon move directly behind West Texas price by $7 to $10. That may lag 60 days, 90 days, but it will have that pattern and that trend. Why is that important to understand? Because at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, there is raw oil and gas being produced somewhere in one of our states from a wellhead on some mineral owner's property. And that barrel of oil, that molecule of gas gets picked up, transported, processed, and run through a refiner, run through a processing plant, and ends up somewhere down the line in our home, in the clothes wearers, in the carpet, right? The key is, where do you want to be in that food chain? Do you want to be at the headwaters where you own minerals and you're involved in exploration, or do you want to be all the way in the downstream by buying petrochemical products and that type of stuff? So one, you can be investing in public stocks. Number two, you can buy into ETFs or mutual funds, which is kind of a portfolio approach to buying across the energy space, and you allow some professional to do that. You can be kind of a gutsy player, and you can go take options and futures contracts on oil contracts or natural gas contracts or natural gas liquids contracts or even liquid natural gas contracts. So you can go play the options and futures. I've got clients that do that. I got partners that do that, and some are really good, and some are just like the guys I know that go to Vegas. They won today, but they lost nine times previously. But today, they're a winner. It can be a very risky investment choice. The other thing you can do is take on direct participation. You can find a source by which you can go make investments directly into a pipeline, into minerals, into oil wells, into refining. The difference is the oil and gas industry is not like it was 10 or 20 years ago. Sorry, I took a quick drink. It's not like it was where you actually had oil and gas wells you could drill for $1 million or $2 million. Today's wells, generally speaking, 85% of the industry is now these deep horizontal wells that are costing $7.5 million to $18 million a piece. So the middle class, the oil and gas industry has disappeared or disappearing very rapidly. And what you're left with is the four choices. Like I said, stocks, ETFs, mutual funds, options, or you can get in direct participation. Direct participation obviously is the more intimate, the more direct economic response, the more risky of the three, because you're literally making those choices based on specific asset participation, but they exist, they're there. And those are choices you can make. Now, when I think about some of the things you as a listener or you as a potential investor that wants to go out and look at investing in oil and gas, remember, this is money and life. From a life perspective, you got to know we're in a super cycle. You've got to know the following. A year and a half, 2 years ago, when Saudi Arabia and Russia decided to flood the U.S. market with oil and drop the prices in a concerted effort together, right before the COVID pandemic. The fact is, it was a crippling 90 days for the U.S. oil and gas industry, because they know, the OPEC and Russia and Saudi know all of our numbers, because we have to have public records of our stocks and what we do and our margins and our debt. They know what our bank loan covenants are. So our competitor, the enemy of oil and gas in the U.S. is the importers from Russia, Saudi Arabia, and OPEC. They know what our threshold of pain is. It's about every 4 to 5 years, they do the same thing. They flood the market. They manipulate the market. They crush U.S. oil and gas companies. Most companies, 30, 40% go out of business. Their bank calls their notes due. They get consolidated. They get bought out. We pick up the pieces from the broken vase, and we try to rebuild going forward 18 months after they kick us. Same thing happened this time around. Big difference this time. Because of the COVID shutdown globally, demand dropped off for the first time, 30+%. Everybody went home. Nobody was driving on the highways. So you had this massive buildup of oversupply around the globe, and Saudi Arabia, Russia, and OPEC weren't counting on that. As a result, we now had, over the last 18 months, about 1.2 billion barrels of excess oil all around the globe. We have now spent that last 18 months consuming that 1.2 plus billion barrels of oil instead of producing it from the wellhead. The U.S. is down by 20% in our production output. We're producing 20% less. The globe came back to life. Everybody's rocking and rolling. Manufacturing's up. We got supply chain problem. More semi-trucks on the road than I've ever seen. And what does that tell you? Demand is almost exactly like it was today as it was before the COVID shutdown. Demand is back. And I said this last March of 2020. Don't worry about the demand. The supply side is the problem. The supply side of the U.S. oil and gas industry has been derailed, and it will not come back for 3 to 5 years minimum. Now, why did I feel that way? Because for the first time in my 36 years of being in this space, I realized that the lenders, those private equity groups, the stock, the equity buyers, just could not get their head around the second major crippling of the U.S. oil and gas industry like it was in 2014 and again last year in 2020. So the capital providers have reeled back. They pulled back and said, this is the second time in 10 years we've had been beaten to death. We're not coming back again. We want to get our bills paid, our bonds paid off, get back whatever we can recover, lick our wounds, and we'll rethink about putting money back in the oil and gas sector in the U.S. if we can see evidence that something will be different the third time. Well, that means you have a prolonged avoidance, a prolonged shortage or drought of capital coming in the U.S. energy market. Now, everyone listening on this show, remember, it's Money and Life. It's Talk with a Texan. I'm in the epicenter of the oil and gas industry, Permian Basin, Anadarko Basin in Oklahoma. I'm right here in the Eagleford, the Haynesville. I'm in Allen, Texas. I'm right in the center of 4, 5, 6 major basins. I live, sleep, and eat and breathe this every day. And I don't hear anybody talking about putting together funds. I don't hear about anybody talking about putting capital in. I don't hear about Wall Street coming to the rescue. What they're doing is they're going after what has been incentivized by the federal government. The incentivization has been based on taxes. Where do I get a tax credit? Well, if you invest in carbon, it's a tax credit. If you invest in so-and-so, it's a tax credit, tax write-off. So the capital is chasing what the government wants them to chase, which is not the exploration oil and gas, but the alternative energy and the actual punishment or demise of the oil and gas industry. Now, personally, as a major owner in oil and gas interest in 7 states and mineral interest and what have you, I love that. That's music to my ear. You go ahead and set up all the regulations you want. You go ahead and regulate an industry that every consumer in this country needs. You go ahead and drive the price of oil and gas up so high, it makes solar, wind, and other alternative energies make economic sense. And I'm going to be staring at $150 to $250 a barrel for crude oil and $7 to $12 for natural gas per 1,000 cubic feet. And that's not good for the economy. That's not good for your investments in real estate or virtually any other aspect. Most companies on the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ are going to get crushed because their bottom line is going to be completely absorbed by the cost of energy and fuel and labor and supplies and raw material. It's going to be completely eaten up. So it is going to cause stagflation. It's going to cause oil and gas rising prices created by the federal government is going to cause rising prices, which in effect are going to hurt investments. It's going to hurt business growth. And it's going to cause massive inflation. And that's why I believe we're in a super cycle. The super cycle to me is we're going to see sustained high prices for raw material and crude oil and natural gas liquids for 3 to 6 years. I personally do not believe, even if we get to $125 or $150 a barrel for crude oil, I personally do not believe that those capital providers are going to come back to the oil and gas industry. They will. It'll be drudgingly. It'll be in dribbles. It's not going to be anything of significance until probably early 2024. Now, when I look at an investor, I'm going to give you, I only have about 10, 15 minutes left max. So I want to get down to what you need to take away from this show. Number one, you better have oil and gas in your portfolio. It's a great inflation hedge. So the question is, do you buy stocks? Do you buy ETFs? Do you buy options or futures? Well, unfortunately, if you look at the history of the stock market, when it takes a correction, it drags those energy stocks down with it. Now, they may rebound faster. They may not get drugged down as far. But when everybody sells off, they sell off. They're covering margin accounts and day trading, and energy stocks will take a big effect. But the side of that is that if you're a longer-term player and you own energy stocks, when the market does correct, you buy more of that energy stock because here's why it's going to happen. These oil companies, there's fewer of them. And those that have access to capital, that have cash flow, that are being driven by those barrels of oil and MCF of gas they're selling every day, go a lot higher because they're getting immediate gratification from whatever sold. So those stocks will rebound a lot faster and they will lead the market back. That's what happened in 2014. Now, I look at the way you might consider investing directly in oil and gas. And look, I'm going to cut the chase because many of you, we all think we're smart. We all think we have a lot of money and some of us don't have money, think we're going to get money, but let's just lay it on the table for all my listeners. Okay, being a millionaire these days doesn't mean anything. Back when I was a kid, it did. You said you're a millionaire. I was like, whoa, man, you got $1 million net worth. Unfortunately, because of the amount of wealth that's been created over the last 25 years, being $1 million and you say, hey, I've got $1 million net worth, people start apologizing for you. They go, I'm sorry, man. If you could get a second job on the weekend, you can do better. Now you got to be a decamillionaire. I mean, really 5% of the top 1% really belong in oil and gas investing directly. Not in stocks, not in ETFs, not in mutual funds, but in direct investments. Why? It's more emotional than it is financial. Most people never take the time to learn about oil and gas. They only want to think about write a check, put an investment, when can I trade it, when can I liquidate it, how fast do I got to be in. We're also trained the last 20 years to be in the dot-com era, to be in the stock buying era. Everything's immediate gratification. Maybe 5% of the top 1% of the wealthiest people in this country really belong in oil and gas. That's my personal opinion. And when they invest, the problem is it's a tough game. You're not playing the short ball. You're playing the long ball here. You're looking at a par 5. You're going to work your way down the fairway. You're going to correct maybe a bad stroke, but you're going to stay within the fairway. You're not going to get into the rough. So what that means is you're not going to go jump into it and put a bunch of money. You're going to take your time, but you can have direct ownership, and there's a lot of risk to it, but there's a lot of benefits to it, but you're going to have a lot more chance of being scalped. You're going to have a lot more chance of somebody taking advantage of you because this is a very, very specific, unique industry. I liken investing in oil and gas like somebody trying to explain cryptocurrency to me 2 years ago. I sat down, and as smart as I think I am, I listened for an hour, and after an hour of listening to this guy speak about cryptocurrency, I got up and said, I think I'm more confused now than when we started. But oil and gas can be that way because the idea is that because investors are so unaware of what takes place in the oil and gas sector, they also don't have any reference points. They don't have any way of comparing notes. There's not a centralized source of finding out that data. So as a result, you leave yourself very vulnerable to unscrupulous characters that might ask you to become an investor in direct oil and gas. So what I want to tell you is a couple of things. There's a site called www.sec.gov, Securities Exchange Commission.gov. You can go in there, and it has all kinds of tips about investing in alternative assets, including oil and gas. It tells you how to check out people's names, if they've been a registered broker, if they've been banned, if they've got lawsuits against them. You can always check with your state securities board and say, you know, this guy, John Brown from Alabama, has asked me to invest. Call the state securities board. Do you have any record of him, his company? You can do some basic due diligence and calls. And the fact of the matter is that, as I said a minute ago, every investor that has a portfolio in this market today should start thinking about an inflation hedge, which includes commodities in some form or fashion, either through public equities or through direct ownership. Oil and gas in specific as a result of the super cycle I believe that we're in, and the fact I continue to see rising oil and natural gas prices over the next 3 years and very little that the U.S. producers can do about it because we're absent that capital that we need to go out and drill more wells and provide more production and bring them online. So today, you know, you got to think about, well, how do I do that? Well, you know, start thinking about some stocks. So I'm going to throw out some stocks. These are not recommendations. I'm going to tell you stocks that I look at, that I follow, that I bought and sold. Today, I only own one of the stocks I'm about to mention, and I'll tell you which one I own. But here's what I think. I'm going to look at companies like Continental Resources, a proven long-term mid-sized company, $16 to $18 billion company run by Harold Hamm. Love the company. Love it from the way they operate and drill wells. Their stock today is trading around $48 a share. It was down to $8 a share last year during the debacle, so it's made a great rise. They made a great acquisition. And I believe that stock has a lot of running room. ExxonMobil, again, $64 a share. I think it has some profit margin problems based on the refining and the processing petrochemical side, but that's always a stable stock. And it was above $90 a share 3 or 4 years ago. So that one has some room to run, but it's your old tried and true oil and gas stock, has a great dividend. EOG Resources has done well. Ovintiv, OVV, love the company, love the way they drill. Made very good money on their stock. Do not own either stock right now today. It's trading around $35 a share. I can easily see that stock making a much bigger move as commodity prices go up. Devon Energy, long, old school company, doing really well. Symbols DVN, they're at $43 a share today. Marathon, not so impressed with Marathon. They're at $16. I think they had some real management issues, but it is a stock that has, I think, some real upside based on commodity prices. Despite their management, I think they have some room to run. And of course, you got ConocoPhillips, which is COP as their symbol. It's a $72 a share. Again, it's kind of like Exxon and these big boys. They move, they just don't move with quite the same resilience as maybe a smaller stock. So I just want you to know that oil and gas is something you better pay attention to. The view from my seat looking out, and I'm looking out my window right here in Allen, Texas right now, and I'm looking out the window and I'm going, that highway's packed. I'm looking at the highway northbound here on 75 Expressway going, man, I'm going to have a long ride home because it's bumper to bumper, car to car. And the truth of the matter is that most of those cars out there have some kind of a hybrid. They got some kind of electrical drive. They got some kind of a Tesla type car, or they're the opposite. They're out there in these big old Super Duty Ford pickup trucks like I drive, sucking fuel, just standing there because that's what they burn. But I got news for everybody. We're not driving less. We're not having our kids walk to school. We're not telling them not to buy a car. We're not telling them to get a new apartment or a new house. Everything that's happened in the last 20 months in this big economic boom for the U.S. has just created more and more addicted consumers to petroleum and fossil fuels. So today we're making about 11.5 million barrels a day here in the U.S. from our own wells. We're consuming about 21 million barrels a day. We were consuming about 21 million barrels a day last March before the whole COVID and the Russia-Saudi Arabia collusion. But now we're only making 11.4, 11.5 million barrels a day. We were making 13 million barrels a day. In my opinion, truth be known, had we not had Russia and Saudi Arabia affect us and we had some kind of consistency in the government, we'd probably be making 15 to 18 million barrels a day. And we'd be almost about energy independent and not have to buy a single barrel of oil from OPEC, Saudi, or Russia. But that's not the plan. The plan is to make consumers move to alternative energy. The plan is for you to learn to accept $6, $8 per gallon gasoline and drive your car less. They want you on trains. They want you on buses. They want you in HOV lanes. They want you to work close to home. They want to keep you apart. Who's they? The government, the current administration, the liberal left. I said it. There you go. Now everybody knows I'm conservative right, if you didn't know that already. But the fact of the matter is that if you're not an investor in oil and gas, the fossil fuel space, in the public market, direct interest, ETFs, futures, or options, the fact is you're our customer. You're my customer, not an investor. You're going to consume at those high prices the very asset that I sell every day, which is the oil and gas coming off the wells I own an interest in. And I'm going to tell you right now, it is going to affect your real estate portfolio, the cost of new goods such as sheetrock and wood and paint, and the cost of labor, and that guy mowing your grass can pay more for his gas and he's going to have a surcharge. You say, well, how do you know that's going to be true? What do you think the airlines did to us back in 2008 when oil went to $145 a barrel? They started charging us a fuel baggage fee. They never left. That baggage fee is still here today. Hey, listen, folks, I'm Troy Eckerd. I'm talking with a Texan. I love doing my show. I've had a couple of you send me some emails about great ideas about what I can add to the show. And the truth is that I love your input. I like the idea that you're going to help me figure out some topics you want to talk about. We're going to get into some cryptocurrency. We're going to talk about some really great subjects over the next couple of shows. Hang in there with me. If you want to email me some suggestions, ideas, it's troy@talkwiththetexan.com. I look forward to seeing you next time. I'm signing off for today. The U.S. oil and gas industry, it's a growth market. It's an inflation hedge. It's the place to be. Do it if you qualify. Do it if it makes sense. Do it at your own pace with professional advice. And that's all I can tell you for today. Thanks again for joining me. I appreciate it, everyone.
Thanks to all our incredible friends for joining Troy for today's show, Talk with a Texan, Money and Life. Please join your host, Troy Eckerd, for another edition of the program every Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time and 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Follow Troy, engage him, challenge him, but most importantly, listen to him. 3 decades of expertise at your disposal. We'll see you here next week.